Off.
Good morning, good noon, good evening, wherever time and place you're listening to us from, straight from the 909. It's Mark, Andre, myself, Isaiah, and together,
that's hip-hop.
Today we're talking about an MC who's been in the game well over 30 plus years and who's released numerous albums, mixtapes, and a lot of them probably can't even be found on the internet anymore. We're talking about the Master Ace. And we're talking about his album, A Long Hot Summer, his third solo album, a follow-up release to his 2001 concept album, Disposable Arts. It is an honor to be talking about this album, this MC, Master Ace. I was telling Mark earlier, it almost feels like in a sense, he's kind of like our fatherly figure in hip hop. You know, I feel like, he just has so much insight, so much experience. And by the time I listened to him, that was like midpoint in his career.
Yeah.
Prime Master Ace, mind you. And he was just a guy that came off experience. Like he was ahead and, he was somebody I always looked up to as an MC. His delivery was very supreme. Guy was smart, but he had a lot of style too. And, somebody I try to, keep in the rotation till this day. So today we're covering A Long Hot Summer. Mark had recommended us to review this album. What was it like when you guys first heard Master Ace? We'll start with you, Andre, on Master Ace.
Well, Master Ace was, I have two treasure troves of hip hop. One is my cousin's like secret porn stash of music. And my buddy, he just had this huge stash of just CDs. And I remember Master Ace was in there. And with this huge stash of CDs, Master Ace popped out for me because he reminded me of M a little bit. I was really big on M, so I can't be wrong on that. It's just I was a huge M fan. So when I was listening to Master Ace, I was like, he has very similar flavors. He even had like, you know, the jokey singles and stuff, like the jokey songs that almost aligned to what M was doing. So when I got the M bias out of the way, it's just the way that Master Ace puts his shit together, his rhymes, his style, everything was refined and clean. And it was really inspirational for me at that time when I was just learning. So it got me into my storytelling on a whole nother level because this whole album is like a movie and he sequenced it well like a movie. So before I even understood all this music production stuff, it was just something it's like I felt like I was watching it, you know, somewhat similar to Built for Cuban Links. But just this one just felt very cinematic, you know. And then
felt like Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. It's like a Scorsese film. Yeah. Just like, you know, like a mobster film.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I just liked the context. And then, I just kept listening to him throughout the years. So when we finally came back for the, you know, just for this, I listened to it again. And I was like, there's a whole new layer to what he was doing. You know, it was mind blowing. I kind of got different layers out of the story. You know, the story is simple. He's an MC. He's the artist. He's the guy you see up front. Fats is the guy in the background, but Fats can metaphorically be anybody in the industry. He could be a manager. He could be an A&R. He can be just that dude that's promoting for you. He can be one of them dudes in the company, like in the building, handling business for you. Fats represented that. And Master Ace was representing what the MCU does. He's on tour, but Fats is selling that shit or doing what he got to do to hustle. So I felt like Master Ace was so ahead in the the story. It just brought me further into that idea of storytelling does matter as an MC. You know what I'm saying? Master Ace to me is just very refined, very clean, and his storytelling seamless. So I had this on loop for a very long time. So it's part of what I am, you know?
Yeah.
You hear a lot of what I do through Master Ace's work.
This album, when I wanted to recommend it to you guys, I wanted it out of my system as quick as possible because I say that because this album, I've heard it plenty of times over. My buddy, our buddy Isaiah Demetrius was the gentleman that gave me a bunch of CDs, and one of them included in this was A Long Hot Summer. And I never, at the time when I was time like a 2004, 2005, so this was a fairly new release at the time, I didn't give it a chance. And I'm like, I've never heard of Master Ace. It's like his name didn't come around the circles of what I was trying to listen to. But then fate happened and I listened in on Travelocity, and I listened to it and Wordsworth was on it. And I'm like, oh wait, hold on. That song's dope. What's the root album of this? Mm-hmm. go back into my iPod and it's a long, hot summer. So back, hit the whole album. And this is the first time I've actually listened to a concept album from start to finish. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, you really want to continue on the whole album to see what's really going on. The tracks are slamming, but the whole story is too.
Yeah.
And you get a dope concept album. You get dope tracks, but then you also get the tutorial from Master Ace. I say it like this because Master Ace, he's the gentleman that's perfected the same punch. You know, you don't want to fear the man with multiple styles. You want to fear the man that's done the same punch 1,000 times.
Yes.
He is the gentleman that has his delivery, his rhyme selection for the end of the bars that he uses and are perfect. It's consistent. And listening to that as a kid trying to rap, that's where you get to learn a lot. You get to figure yourself out and be like, man, I could do it like Ace. Like, yeah. He makes it seem so easy because he's done it so many times, but that translates to us as aspiring rappers to be like, man, we can do this. He makes it like that. And with tracks like The Grind, like, that shit hits, man. Like, you can once we cross the bridge when we get there talking about it, but damn, like, this album is it hit me in the beginning on many levels. Like, the first concept album, just getting a tutorial from somebody, yeah, actually, like, a roots of your style develop on a long, hot summer.
The way I heard Master Ace was on Cunning Linguist's album, and it was a track called Seasons. And I was just hunting for beats. That was a period of time when I was just hunting because, you know, I was recording and I was excited about trying to, like, do mixtapes. And so I was looking for these beats. RJD2 puts out a beat I thought was very futuristic. You know, his style, his beat making style is dope. Yeah. So Master Ace was on it. And that was the first time I heard him. And he was talking about the bling era. And I was like, man, this dude, like, I felt that because I was all about, you know, it's all about underground hip hop. You know, that's kind of more or less where I was coming from. And so when he was talking about the bling era and the criticisms to that, I thought it was dope. Like, I related to that. And I was just like, man, who is this guy? Yeah. And I think his delivery is what really drew me in. His rhyming was, like, very almost perfect.
Yeah.
On each rhyme he was given. And the vocals, you know, he has a very unique voice. And this was not even me knowing about him, but, you know, I learned a lot, you know, as we were doing this. And I was like, dang, this dude was in the Juice Crew. I had no idea about that. And we talked about the Juice Crew on the KRS-One episode. And that's a legendary group. That's a legendary group to be a part of. And so coming from that, and then him, I didn't even know he did albums early in the 90s. You know, I was still a kid.
He even showed you that song,
the one from Juice Crew or
no, the West Coast one.
Oh,
the
yes. Sitting on Chrome, right? From that album.
Yes.
You were showing me a track out of that.
Yeah. Where he starts off mad lyrical.
That's another thing I didn't realize until recently is, cause I mean, his style's already dope.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how I knew he was versatile, like, but I didn't know how versatile he was. You know what I mean? Hearing that album and hearing him on Juice Crew, man, this guy has grown and his style has evolved with the times. Yeah. This is a guy who could have made it mainstream if he wanted to, but he chose to be underground. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's something dope about that. I think that's what makes him the underground elite. It makes him a staple and like that leader of that movement. I think that's why, cause he chose to do that. Right. He could have easily, you know, been like Nelly or something and made it mainstream if he wanted, you know what I mean?
I think something about Long Hot Summer Because this was my first experience with him. I've listened to everything since then, but this one in particular, I felt like he refined and cleaned everything up, and he chose to get the story out, you know, instead of being the big lyrical guy. I feel like he decided to clean it up and just make a perfect album. And this was one I run this shit during the summer. You know, when I first heard it, I actually heard it during the summer. So it was just one of these, it's actually kind of part of my summer experience.
Yeah, this is like we're doing this in the first week of summer now.
Summer just started.
Guys, we got to do this album now.
It's perfect, man. And I think just the emphasis on, we were talking about what makes, you know, a great MC and what they're capable of. This one to me feels like a refinement of storytelling on the level of Nas, and he's not overbearing you with the rhyming and the technique. Right. We're super technical guys, but this album is still highly technical from how he's sequenced the album and put it together. It's very film like, you know, so I feel like he went for a bigger picture than I'm going to outrhyme the next MC.
Right. You guys remember who Wordsworth put over on the comments? He said Mass Dace is inspired by Mass Dace. Yeah.
Shouts to Wordsworth.
Yeah. Shouts to Wordsworth for sure. Yeah. You know what? Special thank you to Wordsworth, man, because man, how cool is that dude for I was at work and I was chuckling on Mark. I'm like, okay, Mark. Yeah. All right. Let's add him now. And I continued working. And then also my phone started like, and I was just like, what? Let me check this out. And I see like words were blowing us up. And I was like, man, dude is so, so cool to do that, man. So shout out to Wordsworth, and shout, you know what,
big time.
For anything, I just want to, you know, shout him out back. I put the links to his stuff, his books, his projects and on that episode where we talked about mirror music. So check that out.
He has like a course online where you can actually like, hip hop fundamentals courses and stuff. So feel free to check those out.
Yeah.
Too.
Check those out. So shout outs to him, but yeah. So, Master Ace, man, I just found out too, that he's actually currently working on, putting this compilation of this album, Disposable Arts, into theater, like into a musical.
That's the next level though. I love that idea. That's the next level.
Like I love that actual MCs are doing this. No disrespect to Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah.
For Hamilton.
But Lin is dope.
Real rappers to do real rap in theater. Bro. That way there could be a better crowd for it.
I'm an apologist for Lin-Manuel. Only because I saw his documentary and he's just us. It was just him and a bunch of nerds freestyling and rapping with a dictionary and doing theater. They're good.
They're really
and
good.
Then they got corporate and that's what happened. Then Hamilton just took over the world, right?
Yeah.
And you know the follow-up though, right? Nobody's been able to make another Hamilton. Yeah. So if they're going in that direction, this to me feels like it's rooted from our culture. It's going to work perfectly, bro. Yeah. That's just going to be
fine. I was going to say, if this project from Master Ace, because I think it's going to start in London, I believe. And then it's said to come to New York. I don't know if that's going to be on Broadway or what, but
let's hope they star some.
Yo, son, get us some tickets, B. Yo, get us some tickets.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm trying to see that just to be a part of that.
Yo, I'll come out there, man.
That's another level, you know, to take it, you know? And so back onto his album, like we were just talking about, it's like a film, man. And he really is thoughtful from the cover to the actual production, to the skits, all coming together.
Well, because the cover, if we want to dive into there, he's on the stoop, right?
Right. Yep.
Right. That's actually prevalent in the storyline.
Right.
You always sitting on that stoop. I don't want to do a terrible Fats impression, but
you Stoop Dog.
Yes.
I'm driving around like, wah, wah, wah. So funny though. So deliberate too.
I feel like it's all for the theme and it felt very cinematic, you know? So the cover was perfectly cinematic. And by the way, I had the whole thing. My whole stash was actually legitimate CDs, you know, and some stolen ones, but you know, this one, we had the cover, we had everything.
Yeah.
And just something about this album, man, it just stuck with me. And let me be real with you guys. I was really into that super lyrical hibbity bibbity stuff. Master Ace wasn't even like, he wasn't going there. He was just giving you something that was really unique. Mm-hmm. I think his delivery and his just presentation overall, quality of the production, the beats, everything, is what kept me there. And then as I matured with the album, I'm like, this is, he was so ahead.
He's like,
this is what we needed to do.
He's like Tim Duncan, bro. He's like, the big fundamental. Yes. Yeah. Like,
exactly.
He can't go wrong with his style, you know,
yeah.
Like where, like his delivery is perfectly placed. Mm-hmm. You see it through this album.
Yeah.
Andre was mentioning, the lyrical content takes right. Not even a backseat, but he just delivers how he delivers, and it's just like not very lyrical, but it's enough to where a story can develop and a story can be very descriptive too. There's a lot of room for it.
Commando versus Transformers, mm-hmm. right? Commando, yeah. We build up, we kind of figure out what's going on, then the action hits and it gets crazy.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Michael Bay film is just explosions from beginning to end. It's an overload. I feel like everything Precisely. That he's done in this one is just refined.
Technical.
It's just very mm-hmm. technical. Like Illmatic, right? And we're not going there with the comparisons, but Illmatic is cinematic in a sense through the words.
Correct.
The visual comes through the words that Nas is using. Whereas Master Ace allows the production, his vocal tone, his experience, everything makes the image bigger.
Like a maestro would do during a symphony.
Yeah.
Exactly. And with this cover, because this adds to the whole album, you know, let's talk about this a little bit. He talks about it himself actually online somewhere. And what they did was they imposed his image. I think he was sitting on a stool or something, and they imposed that image behind him. So the photographer went out around Brooklyn, took some shots or whatever. The funny story to this though, I think that's funny, is that I guess they went back after like the 30th anniversary of this album to retake shots of it. And the owner of that house or whatever came outside. He's like, what are you guys doing? Like, why are you guys taking pictures of my house?
Yeah.
And these European photographers, Master Ace was like, I just let those guys talk to him, cause I could already tell, like, this guy's on my vibe right here. Me and him talk, like, I don't know what's going to happen. So the European photographers are talking to him like, oh, we're sorry. It's the 30th anniversary of his album. Here's the album cover. And he was like, what? That's my house. You know, you guys got my house on the album cover. Where's my royalties? My residuals.
Royalties.
He went there and Master Ace was like, oh man, this guy. So it turned into a whole situation.
Man, the struggle of an artist, man.
So he ends up talking to him and everything, and kind of like, you know, he took pictures with them. They kind of smoothed it out.
Yeah.
And so I guess they're all good now, but at first it was like,
what are my residuals for taking pictures in public?
Had Fats come over real quick, rough them up.
Yeah. But he talks about this album cover and what it meant to him. And you'll notice that he's like looking up kind of to the skies, looking up to the heavenly being, you know, whether it be God or whatever you guys believe, but he's looking up to that. And he wanted to be like, he was relaxed. So he was in his robe. He was in some sandals. You can't see it on that cover album, but it's to resemble that it was his house. He was in front of his own house.
Comfortable.
Writing. Yeah. Comfortable.
Doing what he does best.
And yeah, doing what he does best. In this album, you know, talks about, you know, that, the struggling artist who wants to make it, you know, out of the hood. And there's, you know, there's things that we face that are in our way, whether it's like the music industry and all the game itself, you know. Mm-hmm. And this album cover is just perfect with this. Also to note, the font, he went with the new font after Disposable Arts. He felt like, you know, going into the new millennium, this is a new look that he wanted to go with. And so he carries that on from Disposable Arts. But
so much attention to detail.
Yeah,
very. Do you think the all white represents anything?
Possibly. I just kind of see it like a kind of like a almost heavenly in a way, kind of like a
pure, like
divine. Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I definitely see that.
Color of mastery.
It's a good contrast between the white and the actual background.
Yeah.
The one thing that's going to stand out. Especially.
And he's also sitting down on Disposable Arts. You know, we know that this is a prequel to Disposable Arts. So, you know, he kind of has that parallel to that. And, you know, I found out with Disposable Arts, you know, that was a project he really beloved, and he felt like that should have went bigger than what it did in sales, but
it was ahead.
Yeah. But that label, I guess, folded, and that kind of like ruined that whole situation.
Yeah.
So the fact that you get up and you do it again with this, you know, with this album to follow it up and make it a prequel to the album and connect it, man, that says a lot about you as an MC, just to not let something like that tear you down.
Creativity in front of everything.
Right.
The design, you know, you got to look at it like designs.
Right.
You know, so with this one though, I feel like you mentioned something a little bit earlier. Just like it kind of feels like he's seasoned enough to talk like he's been here long enough, right? And you get that a lot on this album. A lot of the moments he's just talking about the struggles of being an MC, just having to deal with what he's going through as an MC.
He's revealing a lot of details that are just like the most uncomfortable.
And it almost sounds like a fall off, but it's not. You know what I mean? Like, he's sounding like, honestly, y'all see this grandiose dude, but this sucks. And there are moments where he really breaks it down. It just sucks. And, you know, I feel like it was the most organic approach to this lifestyle.
Yeah. Early on, like listening to this while you're trying to be like an aspiring rapper, you're like, damn, there's a lot of fallback that he mentions that for the first time you end up hearing it.
Yeah.
And it's like, damn. Like,
cause there's a moment after Beautiful where he goes into like F all y'all. Right. Yeah. And it's just, cause I was listening to the album and I was like, oh, this track is dope. Beautiful. Right. But then like right after that, when he goes into that, I'm like, okay, no, this is real though. Like, he's giving you both sides of the coin. Like, and how,
and Beautiful feels. Almost feels, he even says in Beautiful, it's like, he's just kind of calling out the bling era by making Beautiful. The song Beautiful itself is a contradiction to what you would expect from this kind of situation. Yeah. So,
it's like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Basically, oh, absolutely. Is what he's saying in absolutely, that track.
Man. Yeah. Well, while we're here, man, we're already rolling towards the songs, man. Okay. So our three, you know, we'll start with Good Old Love.
Yeah.
Good Old Love. It just strikes me. And the production, man, come on, man.
Yes,
the production is beautiful. And we got Ninth, man.
This is a classic.
Ninth Wonder.
Classic Ninth Wonder beat.
So
Pat Cole.
Shout to Ninth, man. That dude is incredible, man. He only gets better.
Legendary, man.
Early hot streak starting to develop with Ninth Wonder.
Yes. Yeah, he no misses, man.
Good Lord.
But the vibe on this one, the energy is good, and just the love to play off of the sample, man. The sample's excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
I remember hearing rumors about Ninth Wonder and, you know, hearing his beats. And once I started hearing his beats, I was like, this guy, he lives up to the name.
Oh, he does.
You know what I mean? Because like, I heard his beats and I was like, his beats sound very unique to him. You can tell when it's a Ninth Wonder beat just because the soul in it that he puts into it. And you can tell, man, he was early on like one of the dope beat makers. Oh, I remember, man.
Started off hot.
Yeah. Nerd mode. Hey, Ninth Wonder has a chopping technique out of this world. Okay. He will take a song that you're highly familiar with, and he refuses to take what most producers would take, which would be the hook of something, right? Easiest thing to do is just grab the hook because it's the most familiar part. Grab Michael Jackson, you know, pretty young thing. And you flip that shit every way you can think of, right? Where Ninth Wonder would take the hook, or where your average producer would take the hook and flip it, Ninth Wonder goes into the verse and he grabs moments from the verse. He might grab a little bit of Michael going, ooh, and he'll just grab that. And use a piece of that later.
Right.
And he'll make it sound like Michael sang it in the song. Ninth, as far as his sampling technique, he hasn't gotten worse. He's only gotten better throughout the years, man. So Ninth's sampling technique is beyond exceptional.
Yeah.
He does something we're not thinking about.
I think there does got to be a point in time where we do an episode on these particular producers. They're legendary.
Talk about our favorite beats.
We should individually have our favorite producer, and we should support them all the way through. I think that would be great.
Ayatollah's going to be one of those guys. Ninth Wonder. Like, there's a
Premier,
lot.
Timbaland,
Crisis,
man.
Like, there's
Dilla,
a lot.
Yeah. Dilla all day.
For sure.
So,
even Excuse Doom. Me. Even Doom.
EDA.
Yeah. Oh, especially Doom. But for this one, though, Ninth. Yeah. Ninth did an exceptional job on this one. I just love the vibe on this, man. Master Ace just holds it down.
Oh, you know what I want to say? I was reading some reviews that people do just to get like an outside perspective. There was a reviewer who said, skip the first five tracks of this album. I'm like, what? Skip the first five tracks of this album?
It's like coming 20, 30 minutes late to the movie.
Yeah, I'm like, why would I skip
five tracks of a concept album?
Right. Right, yeah.
You'll make a lot of sense out
of it. That was really like just a horrible.
Just started the grind. Y'all don't like fast, man.
I mean, if you skip this stuff, then like, I don't trust your ear if you skip this.
Well, the way I feel it is like you don't want to watch the movie.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's you walking into the movie and you're like, shit, I missed like 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, why would you? It's like leaving early or like coming late to a game or something like. To a Laker game, you come like second quarter. Like,
why are they up 40 points? What happened?
Yeah, you missed the whole beginning.
You hit the point.
Like, yeah.
That's... Wait, well, okay, so that's why I said Commando, right? Mm-hmm. Commando is a well-known action film, but it takes a little time to get started, right?
Right, right.
So they're saying, yo, just get to the shooting. Fast forward to like 15, 20 minutes, he's going to be shooting
by
then.
It's the buildup, man. It's, right. I mean,
come on, man. Yeah, new reviewers, man, they have no patience now. Yeah. You got to let these things build, man.
Right, right.
You have to. I feel like if you don't get the first of all, if you don't start from the very beginning, by the time Fats shows up, it won't make sense.
No. Yeah.
I mean, Fats is at the beginning counting the money, but by the time we get Fats Belvedere and go from that point
you'll
forward.
You'll miss the whole point of the album.
Right.
Right.
It's like, it's, I don't know. It's like you wouldn't skip the beginning of Scarface.
No. No.
So anyway.
Exactly.
Fuck what he says. Good Old Love is exceptional.
Right.
Big City is great, but it's not our favorite. We can't put it in the favorite. Right.
Right.
Usually every album we've picked so far is usually the first track where the MC raps where we fuck with it. Right. Nah, Good Old Love, just the vibe on this thing, it carries the whole shit. If anything, it's just like, you know, light as a feather, and it's carrying us up to the next step in this film experience, you know? Every part about this is just warm and refined, man. It doesn't sound like some hood shit. It sounds just like something that, to me personally, feels like it emphasizes what Master Ace's skill is, bro.
Right, right.
He's not even over-rapping you, and this is just my favorite track from
him. He's an MC that has been underappreciated, I think, and so this talks a little bit about that, because, you know, he went from a period, I think, from 1995 to, 2001. I think that was a period where he didn't put out anything, so it's been a while, but it was almost like people almost kind of forgot him or didn't, you know, was kind of happy that it was gone or whatever that was, you know, it was undervalued, I think. And I think that, to his point, you know, he talks about it. He's like, you know, I'm going to take it. Give me that love. Like, I'm going to take it for what it is now.
Get to me.
The first four bars of this song perfectly play into how deliberate he is with his rhyme skill. He's like, hey, yo, the world going to show me some love. Listen. And I'm not talking about the fake hugs and kissing. 15 years, a lot of love is missing.
Right.
I done already showed I'm not above the dissing.
I mean, visually, I mean, conceptually, he's already on the frequency of a different kind of artist, right? If, you know, I don't want to sound like a nerd on this shit, but that's what this whole podcast is, nerdy. The context is simple. He's taking a perspective that's almost kind of like him wearing the white clothes on the block, right?
Right.
He's not taking the super hyper masculine, crush everybody in my way role. He's almost a tour guide for his experience of being this MC before he goes on tour.
Yeah. So, and you know, the thing I love about Master Ace is, like, you know, he's kind of like this, like, good energy, but at the same time, like you said there, he's not above the dissing either at the same time. So, like, and there's been examples of that where he did a track dissing Boogeyman. So, like, there's, you know, don't get him twisted. In other words, you know,
right.
He's a MC, a well-rounded MC who can do it all, very versatile. But and also too, nobody likes these fake hugs and kisses. Like, you know, fake that kind of love. Yeah, that's gosh, like,
you know, you could see it a mile away,
and
et
you
cetera.
And everybody does that. You'll have that person that will be like, oh, hi, you know, and then talk about you behind your back.
Mm-hmm. Like, now he's saying he want a real fan base. Right, exactly. He don't want no artificial fan base. Nah. He wants y'all to feel him for real. Right.
Right.
And that's why that's when we lead into the, I'm going to take what I'm owed.
Won't wait till I'm old.
The game got rules and y'all breaking the code. Right. And he's throwing some fours at you, you know, four syllable rhymes, but simple as that. Right. You know, he's going to take the love. He's going to get what he needs. But the idea is simple. I'm coming in. I feel like this is the intro track compared to the one before it, but it's not. It's not. It's just him kind of personifying who he is.
Right. Right.
But yeah, he's going to get that love regardless of how you feel about him, because you got to love this album, basically.
And you know, he talks about, you know,
y'all don't really think I can be hot in the club. Right. Y'all think I'm washed up, like I got in the tub. But I got in the tub, right? Sorry, and I gotta get the floor.
He talks about this, you know, like there was a point, like a fork in the road, where he came to a point where it was like, do I write this way and go mainstream? Do I do that, or do I write what I think is dope and keep it legit? And so he, you know, he could have made more club hits, you know, or went that direction. I think he really could have, but you know, the thing that's dope about him is, like, I love the fact that it's kind of like
he never deviated from his true self.
Right. Exactly. Dude.
The shit is underground like a gopher. Show a little love for us over. So
exactly.
I feel like he, you know, he's just saying his love for hip hop. To me, he's given his stance. He's given his stance for the game, but I love the playoff of the sample. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Let me put y'all on like a bulb in the socket in the club. Niggas knock it with a dub in the pocket, right? So I see a couple layers on that one. But the idea is simple, man. He's just trying not to be like these guys. Simple and plain, right? I think he's always going to go, because this is the bling era, so he's completely contradictory to the bling era.
Exactly, yeah.
The when he's describing the when he's describing his mother-in-law and father-in-law, he'll be like, but now I got a wife and she's bad as Hallie. Her mom is a militant. Dad is rowdy. Mm-hmm. The fans kind of act like they're glad I'm outie, but they're probably sitting at home sad and pouty. A lot of problems he's dealing with. He's like, man, I got people I got to deal with all sorts of ways. The fans, mother-in-laws, all types of shit.
But he's rolling off them four syllables rhymes as well. Bad as Hallie, dad is rowdy, glad I'm outie.
He's
sad and pouty.
I like the fact that his limo driver's white and his attorney's black.
Okay, that's another thing. So he's just talking about how the game is switched, right? Right? Because, you know, if you think of how the game is, it's almost like the reversal, right? So I like the context of him being in power. I think everything he's saying in regards to this is he's not following the status quo of anybody else. So he's getting away with, having a white driver and his lawyer's black, which would be contradictory.
I enjoy the fact that he keeps his rhyme style and his delivery right in the middle with every single track and does not deviate. He is pretty much
consistent.
I like the fact that from the start of this album, like everything to him is in unison. Like the spiritual concept of this album, the ideas, the flows, production, like this is just this is that one shot. This is like, you know, in A New Hope, this is Luke's one shot, you know, but it went perfectly. Mm-hmm. And who better than to do this than some guy like Master Ace with the rhyme style that is almost perfect.
Right.
You know,
verse three, he hits all of New York, right? This is for my Shaolin shooters, right? Staten Island. Because of course we still got Wu in the air. So this is for my Shaolin shooters and my Brooklyn teams, Uptown Bronx and them crooks and queens. I work like a maid when she cooks and cleans, cause it's about to be a wrap from the looks of things. So it's like, I felt like he hollered at his burros, said, what's up? I'm here. Right. And it sounds redundant for us to talk about it on such a basic level, but I mean, the way he tells his story is straight up like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost like we're explaining a Tarantino script, right? Our character walks in the room, he talks to Marcellus Wallace, and he handles business. I feel like everything is, everything has almost an arc to it, like a script.
Right.
Everything is plotted out. So when I heard this album, it showed me, like, M kind of gave me concepts of how to, like, structure a song, but Master Ace structures this shit like a movie, like a real movie. Every song feels like it's part of the movie, you know? This one just feels like he's like, I'm here. Look, y'all, I'm here. You know what I'm saying? Some other
the
shit like that.
The game has changed. The game is strange. The game is lame, and it ain't the same. But that's how it is. You can ask Jizz. You can ask Biz. We did it for the kids. Man, I like
another reference to Wu. So, I mean, I feel like he's in the game, man. He's letting them know what it is. Listen here. This is different here. If you got an eye for detail and an efficient ear, I won't disappear. I'm going to keep on giving. I'm going to keep them living. I'm going to keep them driven. I love it, man.
I love that message right there, too. You know, that I feel that right now. I'm in that spot. It's like, you know, right now we got to live and, like, accomplish what we need to accomplish right now, because now is the moment. And he's touching on that, on those, he's hitting those strings right now for me. Like, you know, he's never going to stop. He's still doing, and I think I saw him doing an event recently too. Just living up to what he's saying here about like 20 years ago, this fool's still doing that. So
I'm down to earth props. And I'm close to the ground and spit shit better than most around. This is how hip hop is supposed to sound. Tell the mother cat's posters down now.
So, I mean, I like that.
Because he knows who he is.
But he's saying, good old love. I feel like overall he's emphasizing, I'm not going to be playing the game like the big boys. I'm going to be doing the underground journey. So him getting with Fats to me is also symbolic, right? Because Fats would represent the industry. The industry would come to you and say, I'm going to fund you and handle you for your tour. All right. And while you're doing you, I'm going to be doing me. That's really the industry.
Yeah, swear going to back to the corporate office and keep doing everything black. Yeah.
Right.
And see, I saw another side to that too. Oh. I saw a side where, Master Ace represents kind of like the artist, of course. He represents that. But then Fats kind of represents the guy who's not really an artist, but still in the same community, still trying to make it out himself out of the community, but doing it in that means.
Yeah.
Whereas Master Ace is trying to do it I guess the right way, I would say.
Okay.
And so they're both trying to, but they ultimately end up both loving hip hop.
Yeah, hip hop, you know.
They fall on hip hop's bosom, you know. They're still and that's a dope to the aspect of what you're saying, the whole script writing, that like to have that now cross like a braid.
Yeah.
That's a perfect motif to this whole thing.
Well, Fats made it seem like his operation would look more legit if he had Master Ace.
Yeah.
And at the time, both of them are at the same place at the same time. Yeah. You saw what goes down.
Right.
Hip Hop's Bosom, by the way, was the alternative name to That's Hip Hop. It was actually a close second to the name.
That was the original name.
How close do we get to Hip Hop?
Hip Hop's Bosom.
Welcome back to Hip Hop's Bosom.
Oh man. So, and then he also shouts out Bernie Mac. There's a Steve Harvey in the beginning. Put your hands together and show love for the one. And so that's pretty dope.
King, plays on Kings.
Kings of Comedy.
Kings of Comedy. So he's playing on the King. And if we can run back to the Fast thing, just real fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe what Master Ace did with this album was, that's why it was the long, hot summer, right? Because mm-hmm. they was running hot the whole tour. He was running hot, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't know, like, because they didn't tell us what Fats was moving. But Fats was clearly moving something.
He was he kept it so vague, like a typical, like just typical
like an
mobster.
Italian, right? A typical mob Italian.
Whatever you need, I can get. You
know, I'll do what I do.
So I feel like this represented the underground version of what a mainstream person would do. Mm-hmm. Since it's, and I say it's underground because he's not getting no help from a system or an industry. He's getting help from the system within his community, mm-hmm. which is dealing whatever the fuck they deal. So I feel like, you know, the hood dude with the money came to him and said, I'm going to produce your moves, but it's really to make my moves look real so I can make more cash off of you. You feel me? So the whole game to me, I feel like he metaphorically did an underground version of what happens in the mainstream. Because in the mainstream, we'll say, you know, I don't want to say any particular label, right? So a particular label approaches you in the same way that Fats does. You're just doing you writing your bars. And he's like, we've been watching you for a while. We've seen your YouTube material, man. You get with us, right? We got to talk to you, right? And then they get together and they convene with you. They sign some kind of deal with you, release an album, and you got a tour going.
We'll give you this much money, but make sure you make all this money back.
Right. But on a mainstream level.
With your album sales.
On a mainstream level, though, they're doing the same shit. Behind the scenes, they're doing shit you don't know. You have no idea what they're doing behind your back. So Fats, to me, represented that in just the underground context. Fats, like, I'm going to move my work.
It's like if you're moving.
And you're going to do your tour, and it's going to work out.
It's like if you're moving weight, you know, you get fronted for moving the weight, but then like, you better make that money back.
Exactly. So it
missing
felt
a couple thumbs.
Right. But this to me felt more real. Yeah. There's more weight to it because you're dealing with the local dude. You're not dealing with a company. So anyway, long story short, I feel like Master Ace was trying to portray like the underground version of this story. Yeah.
Somebody's I like how
they approach you and they're going to say, I can fund this and move you, but they're not a good person. We all know they're not a good person, but we're going to use them anyway.
Right. Keeping Fats's criminal intent and his avenues of how he actually goes about crime, keeping it very vague, makes Fats like very relatable to everybody. Because almost everybody knows a Fats Belvedere in their community.
Yeah.
Whether it be
side hustle or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it be candy or candy or any other type of thing.
Yep.
Always a hustle, and there's always a Fats to move said hustle.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that this this album, you know, is talking about, because on Disposable Arts he starts off coming out of prison, which, you know, is basically like a metaphor of, you know, him being out of the rap game for that period from 1995 to like 2001. Mm-hmm. So now Disposable Arts was like him coming out of prison. This is talking about how he ended up getting in prison in the first place. So that prequel, which is going to be his experience in the late 80s and early 90s. So I can definitely see, to Andre's point, what Fats would represent here, because Fats ultimately kind of,
he doesn't have Master Ace best intention in mind.
So he ends up getting in trouble, getting, you know, and locked up. And so, you know, and there was obviously something that happened with Master Ace where he was out of music for a period of time as well. So definitely can see how that could relate to
Man. He's like, I want to make a character out of this.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So I thought it was brilliant.
Man. Yeah.
I mean, I know some cats didn't like him. And I'll be real with you guys. I mean, you know, after hearing the album a million times, the Fats moments can be skipped. They're skippable, right? Once you get the concept of the film. But yeah. I mean, the initial first few listens, I have to hear this whole thing through. It just, you know.
I wish to be in that position again where I have the ability to do, to like re-listen to a bunch of
these. For the first time.
You know, like listening to this story in different aspects of this long, hot summer.
Yes. So after Fats Belvedere's interlude, we get our second favorite, which is The Grind.
Oh, man.
Which is just a solid, it's solid, honest.
Relatable then as
relatable
a kid.
And honest now. It almost feels even more relatable.
It's one of those, we're going to keep coming back to the description of the timeless piece of a hip hop song. And this one will always be there because it's, dude, the grind is nonstop. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't mean to get on a soapbox, but you know, men, you know, are driven to perform and that's the one outcome that we have in this life. We have to perform, you know? So it's like, it's cool that we get one of these songs like that. Now, you know, because everyone could talk about hustling on the mainstream level, but when you talk about the grind,
the hardship, and
coming from Masta Ace like that, there's a lot more, it's a lot more grounded in stuff that you can relate to because it's like, hey, Masta's is kind of closer to my level. Like I can't talk about the grind at a mainstream level because they're, you know, it's a lot of, there's a lot of capital involved.
And I think
that.
From the outside too, you only see like the good, you only see the success of Masta Ace. You don't see the hardships that he actually has to go through to even get to that level.
Right.
Which, you know, is going to take a process that he had to like muscle through in order to get to where he was at today.
But that down to earth nature of how he expresses himself makes you feel parallel to him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even though we would listen to him like you're on a, you know, higher level than we are, he's brought it to a level where we can relate.
Right.
You know, we can feel how bad it sucks. Probably you can feel the pain almost.
Yeah. So much so that in the first bar, he's like, hey, yo, I'm trying to make my dollars double. Like, it didn't even, like, the next.
And he calls it a power struggle, right?
What do you call it? Dre, too, even right there, the dollars double, the, you know, was it the
alliteration for
a dollar alliteration right there, baby.
But I also want to give credit really quick before we get into this track, Crisis, man. Crisis does this thing on this, and I thought it was cool because we had talked about Elzai and Crisis, their project.
Yeah.
Mm. So coming back to this and me realizing like, oh, man, shoot, here's Crisis again.
Yeah, Crisis is like that. Crisis, okay, so Ninth Wonder, we're going to see him. We're going to know where Ninth Wonder is. Crisis and this dude, Knots. When you see where they are, you'll get mad. You'll like, every beat I went crazy over, it was these guys. Every beat that you heard like on a Busta album or something went, I can't believe this. It was Knots or Crisis, usually. So yeah, these guys are out there, man. But just in general for this track, yeah, I'm trying to make my dollars double. I done found a place to fit in for niggas trying to get into this power struggle. I feel like the power struggle is the search for the money, you know, or at least to maintain it. So the grind continues. The power struggle is the grind itself. I mean, a grind is going against your grain to get to your destination.
And then you also feel like there's that power against you. You know, it's a fighting force pushing you back down.
Yeah.
It just feels like that.
Essentially, you're not supposed to be here.
Right.
No disrespect. It'd just, you know, that's the journey.
The person that you're dealing with, you know, like your boss or like something, you know, whatever hardship you're facing, like, Stone Cold to hands Vince McMahon
and it's
shit like that.
You know, I think it's so silly sometimes. Like you can literally have somebody in the way of your success only for the reason because they don't want to see you be like either at their level or above them simply for that reason.
Right.
They will talk down to you, put you purposefully. So dude, Masta Ace, he's clever, man. He knows what's going on.
I work hard on the job like immigrants and always try to get my first half in advance.
He wants his stuff now, man. You know what I mean?
This is a guy who's money, man.
At this point in his life, he realized he needs his stuff now.
Yeah, it
sounds strange, but the rap game is not a game.
Exactly.
It's not a game.
Yeah.
You can make a lot of money, gain a lot of fame. But don't get it twisted. You could get addicted by a mansion in the Hamptons and get evicted. Because he's saying you're throwing all this money into nothing, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like he can see the end of the journey, right? A lot of our most famous people, unfortunately, throw away a lot of their bread on the visuals. the amenities, right? And I feel like Master Ace is like, just give me the paper. I won't do that. I promise. I promise you, I won't spend all this money.
This whole verse, man, it's talking about like the early years of the development of an underground MC. It's like,
I'd be the manager, road manager, and call handler.
Booking agent, choreographer, and tour planner. I'd be the VP of marketing and promotion, producer, and arranger with a range of emotions.
A range of emotions.
After it all, I still got to perform at 3 o'clock in the morning.
When half of the fans are gone.
And then just being passive aggressive, but it's fine.
Being passive aggressive.
That sucks, bro. Y'all ain't ever headlined to nobody?
Been on the grind since like 88 or 89.
Since we were born.
Yeah.
It's been on the grind. Dude.
You ever headlined to half of a room? That's crazy.
Right. And sometimes it feels like that too. It feels like, you know, you're doing everything and for what? Where's your flowers at? You're doing all this work. Sometimes you don't see it. And that's how it feels. That's how being on the grind feels. It feels like you're doing all this, but where's the prize? Where's it at?
Well, you almost have to thank yourself while you're grinding, and it's a thankless job,
right?
Because you have to keep going.
Right,
you have to keep going. The journey of an artist is very painful.
Yeah,
all of them, really, truly. You know, hip hop artists, they have it pretty rough, man. They have it pretty close to a stand-up comedian bad.
I don't even know.
Stand-up comedians don't got it good. Bro. They struggling, man. They not happy. Yeah. They have it bad.
It's so layered because you're a male rapper, right? Mm-hmm. You're already driven to perform as a man.
Yeah.
And it's like not a lot of people are going to give you props for that. And
you're a man.
And you know, as a dude, you're looking for the props. Stand-up comedians, you especially don't get props from your peers.
Yeah.
But you only get props from the fans. And then you're just like, well, whoa, were they really laughing? Were they, you know,
bang.
Like you start getting into yourself like that.
That fake love.
And it's like, Master Ace makes it so relatable on that level to where it's like, damn, like,
and you know,
where's my props?
Been on the grind since 88 or 89. This game is foul like a plate of swine. Now, is there anybody kind of like me? Is anybody out there on the grind like me? For everybody working 9 to 5, for everybody trying to rise with their eyes on the prize. So now you didn't switch the narrative on it, y'all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on. He knows how to rap.
Right.
He knows how to put the song.
I was going to say, J. Cole, you know, talks a bit about it too, about, you know, this whole phenomenon of like when a rapper passes, then everybody comes out of the woodworks giving that rapper their roses. Gosh. You know what I mean? And to what Master Ace's subject matter here is, you know, like he's living and breathing right now and he's putting the work in. And sometimes we take these MCs for granted. You know what I mean? We don't really. And I love this about Norier's podcast or show.
Drink Champs, baby.
You know, that he does give those MCs their flower. I love that. I love that because that was missing. That was missing big time. And so I just wanted to bring out that point.
Like, yeah.
No, how'd you guys feel about Apocalypse's verse?
Oh yeah, actually, this guy came with it.
Yeah,
dude.
I thought Apocalypse brought it, man. I thought it was beautiful.
I
loved his
verse. I've never I don't think I heard Apocalypse before. So well, first
the,
time vo- hearing
the vulnerability, you know, the, vul-
Doc,
the vulnerability.
He was vanning for real.
Yeah. I really feel like I'm blessed because I was born with talent to rhyme, but the stress got me this close to quitting sometime. On a crowded A-train every morning, I can't wait for the day my hustle game don't got to start this way.
You can see it.
Yeah, but it's just everybody, I mean, the pain is after, you know, if you guys do enough hip hop like I do, you start to learn everybody is simply describing the struggle.
Dog. I went.
Yes.
I was.
Yes. When you break
with
it
their
down,
talent, yeah. With their true talent, though, mm-hmm. they're in the most talented way. Explaining their struggle,
him describing just the A train in New York, mm-hmm. any subway in New York from an out of towner's point of view is ultimate, like super descriptive. And like, I like the fact that he's like on the crowded A train every morning. He's all like, I can't wait the day my hustle game don't got to start this way.
Because
then everybody on that train is like,
and hear my CD.
I don't want to start
and think
like
I'm jumping
either.
The 745 with TVs. Come on, man.
They don't know that I miss tours and shows. I got to go to work to pay bills to keep dough on my clothes. Mm-hmm. Look at that contradiction. No,
hear
of
that
like,
bar,
you're doing your show.
That's a serious bar. I can't even go on tour because I have to work. I have to fucking stay here and work. That's crazy. The tour is your opportunity to make the bread. And he can't go because it's probably not enough. It's not even worth it.
He can't even play the long game with it because that's what hip hop, as an aspiring MC, you got to play the long game. Mm-hmm. especially with like in your early years.
In the shadow of a legend, so they expect me to spit and sound like him, but y'all need to let it go, right? And I think him could represent that dude that everybody already sounds like. He's like, you could just do the easy route and make this bread.
He sounds like so and so.
Right, right. So every day I face the crossroad of rapper drugs, album cuts and singles and crackheads and clapping thugs. So he's like, either I go back and just get into this lifestyle or I do what we are here for and just MC out of this bitch.
Yep.
I feel like the journey of the MC is almost like Pokemon. You just you get in the game and you just find a way out and you survive in the world. you leave your family, you leave your parents at a certain age and you just go out in the world and try to make that shit happen. I just feel like the rap game is just kind of its own torture. Not in a bad way, but it. Yeah. I mean, if you hear it long enough.
And you can do a whole probably playlist of MCs who've talked about the rap game over and over. Tribe did it. I know DMX did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's multiple MCs who've talked about the industry and the monster that it is. Prodigy. And definitely, you know, I'm from the outside looking in, but I mean, I have no experience with the industry, but you know, from hearing all the MCs, like I want no part of that, to be honest, you know what I mean? And I want to make it as an MC, but I wouldn't want no part of that.
Right.
It's a beast. It's a monster. And when you are on that beast, you'll see it, you know, your face is everywhere, you know, but to what cost? There's a cost to it that we don't always see.
It's the label fronting you all that money. And it's like, am I good enough to recoup this and make a living and be more, you know, and make a profit?
And
you could be good enough to just only recoup it and end up at zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Flat.
It's like, I got
TLC.
I got $45 because I sold 10,000 copies MCA took out the rest of it.
I went platinum, but I grossed only $10,000.
That's like, and I bought a big ass bus. You know, money's gone.
That's like almost very close to true. Like what you're saying, though. It's like,
there's a lot, man.
It's dark, man.
It's dirty. It's dirty. So, you know, that's why I like this underground perspective on what he's doing. He's still on tour. Tours are hard work. Tours are crazy.
Yeah.
And for him to have Fats run it with him
makes
it even more deep.
Yeah.
Because Fats is not completely concerned with him. Fats is working while he's working. So I like that idea.
All right. So we got the next track, which is Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Now, before we get into Beautiful, there was this interlude, which I think is a nice setup into Beautiful because Fats is telling him, like, there's nothing good to see out here, man. Yeah. Like, you know, F that.
And stop messing with that crazy bitch. She's a psychopath. You know, all that shit, right?
And Ace is like, nah, I see it differently. You know what I mean? And there's not a lot of cats out there like that, you know, that see the glass half full rather than half empty. And Master Ace is one of those guys that I believe sees it half full, you know, and I love that. I love that. And he on the song Beautiful, he captures the essence of Brooklyn and just that. The eye of the beholder here, you know, talking about just appreciation of life, of things that go on that are just mundane things, but nah, it's actually beautiful. This beat,
Kool-Aid, also, baby.
Kool-Aid, man. This beat actually is, I don't know why, but you know, it's always, I've heard it when I was a kid and it's just a beat that every time I hear it, it instantly takes me back to that point when I was, you know, a youngster downloading tracks and that it just takes me back to that instantly. So on this one, he gives a shout out, BK, Uptown, Boogie Down, Queens. Listen, beautiful. I got a lot to say. Usually my smile stay locked away, but not today. I have to laugh on the real. This the aftermath kind of like ill like Dr. Dre. That is sick. And the reason why this is sick is on multiple levels here because, you know, he had a period where with the Disposable Arts, it kind of like went on the shelf in a sense because it was a great project. His label folded. That was kind of a sucky situation that he went through, but now he's coming back even harder like Dr. Dre. So that in itself it's a bar that holds a lot of weight.
Yeah. Wait, damn, did Dr. Dre, Chronic already came out. Yeah, I was just trying to see where he was at. I was trying to see where Dr. Dre was at.
Yeah,
like
Dr.
5 years after.
He got tied up with, who's that?
The joint before Chronic 2001, he had dropped I can't believe I can't remember. But he just had a bunch of artists on it. And that shit was like a super flop, bro.
We talking about The Firm?
Yeah, The Firm. Yeah, Firm was a flop, bro. The Firm was a flop. So the follow-up was Chronic 2001. He's like, how did Dre fell off? My last album was The Chronic.
I was just talking about like his fallout with Shug.
Basically. Oh, okay. I got you.
Just all of it, you know, encompassed all of it. And then he went and did his own thing with Aftermath, you know. So, you know, I was just talking about that. But sometimes I run in the club and get faded. This game will make you jaded.
Just hate it.
But this song gives a different kind of feeling. It's a new kind of dealing.
It's a special kind of healing. So we flipping it to the beautiful, right? And that's the whole thing. It's going to be all about the emphasis of beauty from that point forward. But look at it. He's literally, as a writer, saying, you're usually going to hear songs about boom, boom, clap, clap. Mm-hmm. But this song, we're doing something different. And then the theme begins. And that's really fucking hard to, like, it's hard to do that as a writer, right? Because as a rapper, I only have 16 bars to get what the fuck I need off. So I could fuck around and waste 8 bars trying to explain the song. Or 4 bars. I could waste 4 bars trying to explain the song, you know? But Master Ace does it masterfully. So it's like he really makes it sound like I'm explaining the theme of the song as I'm doing the theme of the song.
And as you're hearing this track, you can hear him literally in the moment. As he's spitting this, he himself is healing.
Yeah.
As he's spitting this, you're literally hearing him.
It takes songs like that.
Healing right in front of you.
The
wrote it on angel paper.
Yeah. There's quite a few bars and songs to where no matter where you're at, you're always going to say the lyrics out loud. This is one of the moments where I have is like, and I can show what it is. Best flow in the biz. You know what it is. Positive over negative. See the ace of master. Even when I face disaster. Oh, man.
That's a quotable right there.
That's always been around, like me hearing that shit. And I'm just like, oh, I know this part.
Yeah.
Because anytime an MC plays with their moniker or their name, like that's going to always be one of those quotables, you know, like, I don't know if you guys had those moments where you've played with your name, little flips or whatever.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's the moment right there.
Get the respect without dropping a check. hip hop thing might stop in a sec.
And I love how it paused. So
brand new hit you could pop in your deck. It's beautiful.
Oh, and there's nothing fresher than that too. When you have a new album out, you pop it in.
Yeah.
So look inside yourself, something you never felt. I'm going on the hook real quick. Feeling like nothing's like nothing else. What's inside goes beyond your mind is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, a lot of people I listen to nowadays, they try to implement meditation into their bars. Sounds meditative, but I don't think it's about meditation. It's just about beauty. But I just love the description, man. He's very descriptive, man. Yeah, it's that brand new Uptown still in the box. It's that Yankees 10-0 killing the Sox. So everything from this point forward are moments and acts of beauty in his eyes and his perspective.
This ain't hugging the block with the gat in your hand. This is on the catamaran with the sun beaming down while you sat in the sand. you get the contrast of cold weather, just like gripping the steel, just trying to make sure everything's nice, everything's right there. And then all of a sudden, nah, man, I'm on the catamaran. The sun, you know, I got my feet in the sand.
I feel like chilling. I'm more than a cat with a plan. This feels like it's more than a flash in a pan. So this moment is not just going to be here for a small amount of time.
This is milk in the cup, cash in your hand. I felt that one.
Yes.
I felt that one. Because can you just like, that, how else do you describe that feeling?
Whose punchlines are these?
How else do you describe the
Ace.
Feeling of that,
Ace.
You know?
Ace. we don't do the Metal Gear Solid sound effect that much. I love that. Yeah. Yeah, this whole verse is the best type of description you can get for just describing beautiful things and the contrast of what you want to given the exact contrast of what you want to compare it to.
I don't know why these little descriptions are hard to me though. This is that warm coat. On the coldest night, that's why I stole this mic. Y'all don't hold it right. Here we go again. Remember how I was saying about these lines about the mic?
Yeah.
Here we go again. Another instance of an MC speaking about the way, you know, he relates
possesses
to the
microphone.
Nobody else holds it right.
And we might have to do a compilation of just all the times mics were possessed.
Yeah, that'd be a sick one. Yeah. So we'll do a placeholder there. That one's going to be a sick one. We'll do some sort of compilation later.
The most beautifulest thing ever, and it's here to bring terror to the bling era. That was the line I was looking for. And I do like that. The idea is simple. This song is really a punch in the face to this era. You know, I can imagine a bunch of mumble rap today and him dropping one of these, you know? Mm-hmm. So for him to go against the grain, especially when Fats comes to him, right? Let's metaphorically say that Fats is just kind of representative of the general business machine, right? And he comes up to him, he's like, you're not writing some beautiful shit, are you? Like, right. You know, that's not going to work, right? And I feel like this is him almost rebuttaling Fats and also rebuttaling the idea that he can't write a song like this.
Yeah, man. And this era too, we're talking about the bling era, man, that had a hold on hip hop. Nothing's wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the bling era in the sense that it's all hip hop at the end of the day, you know, but there are, I think we do need this driving force that keeps hip hop steady minded and not going off to the point where it's no longer credible. You know what I mean? Like these kind of guys like Master Ace, Wordsworth, all the guys we've covered, they've kept hip hop in position to still be important and relevant in society. And if we deviate so much from that, nobody in society is going to take hip hop seriously anymore. When you have a message to say,
it takes a couple MCs like that to play the long game, to be placeholders for hip hop, to be the, you know, the Master Yodas of this thing, to where they can actually teach and show, and literally in Words' case, literally teach it.
Yeah. Because, you know, MCing is much more than I think being an artist. It's much more about, you know, it's deeper than that.
And being a placeholder takes a financial sacrifice too, because you're not usually, if you're going to be one of those placeholders, you have taken your skill ahead of financial considerations.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, being an MC has a lot more to do with even being the voice of a community, or the voice of problems that we have in the country, in the world. You know, it's a big responsibility. It's a modern day, it's modern day poetry, but, you know, poetry, you know, is one of those things, and Andre's talked about this before. You know, we have classes that study poetry and everything, but we don't realize it because we're living in today's times, but MCing, they're modern day Shakespeare's, they're modern day poets that are very smart cats. Like, being an MC doesn't mean you're dumb. Like, you know, so some people can see it as, oh, you know, they're just rhyming and rapping, but there's so much more to MCing, and there's so much skill and craft and wittiness to it. Like, I don't think sometimes everybody sometimes goes over people's heads.
That's why I'm super hard on improvisational rhyme. That's why I'm super hard on freestyling, because it's like, that's one thing. If like, you're going to be an MC, if you could put that feather in your hat, no one could say anything to you. You get a rhyme off the top of the dome.
Right.
Not a lot of people can even make a full sentence off the top of the dome.
Let alone make it rhyme.
A full coherent sentence to even explain something.
Right. Yeah. Right. I like that. That makes sense, man. No, I, and the way you have to look at it is, you know, these techniques and these skills for individuals, like you're saying, these men are unfortunately, the best word to describe them, nerds, really powerful nerds, right? I say black thought, your mind should immediately blossom with ideas of a nerdy ass black dude. Okay. Questlove, nerdy ass black dude.
Even Tupac.
Tupac, nerdy ass. Tyler, the Creator, nerdy ass black dude. Earl Sweatshirt, nerdy ass black dude.
Jay-Z,
right?
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z's a sophisticated nerdy ass black dude. Just a nerd about high level fashion, bro. He's a nerd about the highest profile things.
I think we don't say it in a disrespectful way, because I mean, we ourselves the nerdy side.
What I call a nerd is an enthusiast of knowledge, right? Yeah. So KRS-One is definitely, no question, a nerd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he is the most powerful nerd we could have in regards to learning this hip hop thing, right? Mm-hmm. Nerdiness or nerdism, whatever fuck, everybody puts ism on anything. Nerdism isn't a problem in rap. Nerdism is the face of rap, and people don't want to talk about it. MF Doom, sincerely a nerd, right? I mean, basing yourself off of comic books, which entire culture is nerdy, right?
Right.
Yeah. And turning it into some cool hood shit is kind of the technique of rappers. Mm. Lupe Fiasco turns nerdy things into very digestible hood snacks, That's the best way I could describe it. Taking something from the highest intelligent form and bringing it down to a Walmart customer, as I call them, general listeners. If I can give this to a Walmart customer and they digest it on the same level as a college student at Harvard, I've done my job. So we get Tupac, Biggie, immaculate at that. Slick Rick, immaculate at that. Rakim, immaculate at that. Those guys really set the ground or the standard. Jay-Z, immaculate at it. Master Ace, his concept to me fits better in the realm of I'm going to take you guys on a journey and it won't make you want to leave. You know, some cats can't even get through the album. So this is the journey. I'm like, I'm having a great time. I could go through this whole album. 22 tracks, right? Nowadays, you see 22 tracks. I'm not interested, right?
Exactly.
So I feel like this was a great example of the standard of the time. Standard has definitely shifted into what I'll call more digestible food. This is more sushi. People ain't into sushi right now, right? They want something quick from McDonald's. Fine. But Master Ace is able and capable of displaying something like beautiful or the concept of beauty and refining it and making that shit dope, man. Yes. Put it on a beat that drives me crazy. Yes. By the way, this beat drives me nuts. But yeah, definitely just the imagery alone, right? It's like grandma's house, Thanksgiving dinner. It's like a day in the park or at night when you get the ball and you play in the dark. He's just saying these moments and giving you nostalgia moments or moments that feel good, right? There's a really good example on the Lion King album, Mood Forever. It's a song with Beyonce, Jay-Z, and Childish Gambino. And he does that same thing with what we're doing on Beautiful. It's the perfect mood. And he just lists all the perfect mood. Jordan in 95.
He's saying all these moments,
right? Yeah. So, you know, same here. I just feel like he was emphasizing it in a very beautiful way, man. Beautiful, as far as I'm concerned, the beat kept me hypnotized. And then I fell in love with the song, if I want to be real.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, extraordinary, man. This shit is extraordinary.
I mean, do you guys want to touch on any more lyrics here before we move on? I think this,
I think I hit what I wanted to.
Yeah. I think this this is definitely,
it's a highlight of how his ability to describe things.
He very much captured, you know, that every little moment that is very beautiful in life, you know. And I think that's an important message, you know, just, you know, for all of us, because you know, sometimes we can fall in this. There's a lot of, like, I would say, negative people out in the world. It's easy to let that influence you as well. And it's very important, I think, in life to keep positive, you know, and to appreciate life and everything. What they say, like, stop and smell the flowers, like all that stuff's important. All right, so we'll move on to this is the fourth honorable mention track.
Yeah. we had a hard time compiling the three, so. We landed on honorable mention with Soda and Soap, just off of the concept, the talent and the skill, the technique. We wanted to go in on the technique on it.
Yeah.
Something different, you know?
You know, what's funny is, like, as I was listening to this album, I was driving to work, and this is actually a track that I found myself kind of daydreaming on, you know? And I came back to listen to it again. Cause I was like, wait, what did I just daydream to? Let me listen back.
Right.
And as I was hearing it back, listening to his lyrics and what he was doing here, I thought this was like kind of like a flexing his feathers a bit, like, here and with the penmanship, you know what I mean?
Got you.
I felt like this was like Alphabet Soup on Disposable Arts, like that was kind of this on A Long Hot Summer. And I like tracks like these, tracks that you already know there's a specific concept going on here in the track, and he stays within the fines of that. And he,
what stuck out to you? Like, what hit you? It was just the idea that he was able to play off of the themes.
Yeah. I liked the fact that he was able to, like, give us, cause I wanted to see, it's kind of like a trick, you know. I kind of want to see him perform this magic trick in front of me, and I know he's going to do it. I just kind of wanted to experience, you know, him listing out all the sodas and all the soap. I know there's some dumb fly that's just like,
don't worry about the fly. It's a long hot song. Don't worry about it.
It's the fourth host.
Yeah. It's like, I got something to say, Isaiah. Lands on the mic. Yeah, I thought it was a dope album.
All right, gotta go. I think it was a nice way to have a story within the song, within each verse anyway, and have like the kind of a nod to the cap of what, like, pro, like pro, product placements.
Yeah, she had a lot of Pepsi. Honey was peace. I just, you know, I love Pepsi
she
plays.
She had a lot of Pepsi. That's sick,
Honey man. Was peace. And no she one, told me she liked my smile like Shanice. She danced at this club and made the guys holler. And in a minute made like $1,000. This reminds me of GZA a lot. It's a very GZA track to me.
Yeah, you're right.
It feels GZA-like, you know?
The club was run by a Mr. Schweppes. He had a rep. And, you know, props to Mastace giving shout outs to Schweppes. I used to always drink their ginger ale. Now I'm stuck on their their tonic water.
Yeah, the tonic water is a lifesaver.
And I believe the story here, just kind of going into that realm of it, is talking about like him being in some sort of like club. To me, I felt like he was talking about a strip club or strip joint here. Mm-hmm. And that he was going in there.
Because word on the street was no joke. Had everything from crack, marijuana to coke. There at the club, saw this guy named Wayne who was always betting money on the Giants game. As soon as it was on, yo, I stayed away because he had the type who welches a bet and won't pay.
Yeah,
welches a bet. Welches a bet.
I keep trying to tell him to be a straight step. Is somebody going to slice him and send him a Dr. Pepper? Dang. This is one of the last remnants of the mention of Slice in a rap song. Probably the last time. Like after that, Slice got cut.
Slice got cut, bro. Mm. Ain't no Slice left. Slice was minimized.
Went to the bar to check the score. Got the bartender, told him what to pour. He put it on the tab as he filled my cup.
Tab.
And told me the game was tied 7-0.
So tab 7-0. I never had tab before. I never had tab in my life. I heard it was just Dr. Pepper and
I love that, man. I love that. The way it was like, I don't know if he didn't expound on it, but that little pause, it like, cause you know, it was coming. Yeah. And then he's like 7-0, like delivery was sick, man.
Here's where we are though, right? Unfortunately, I have to be this guy. We're in 2023. I unfortunately have to listen to the newest artists all the time.
Oh,
the newest techniques out in the game are these associations, just like the 7-0, the tab thing. Mm-hmm. But it gets to the point now where these writers are maybe doing 4 sodas per bar. It's like, damn, you did Slice, Sprite. And then, oh, don't worry. They're great schemers. So they're going to make sure all the clear sodas are connected and all the brown sodas are connected. You know what I'm saying? All the flavored sodas are connected. So Fanta and Orange Crush, they will be in their own scheme. That's where these artists are today. They are able to, in 4 bar chunks, describe 20 drinks in a scheme and then land the bar on the 4th bar. Or land the punch on the 4 bar, rather. What I'm seeing here, when I say it reminds me of GZA, GZA is like, I'm going to say the reference, right? You know, on a Gladys night, right? Whereas Andre 3000 would go, I'm glad it's night, right? Because he added glad into it. MCs today, they will go all the way through the pips by name all the way to Gladys night, right? So I just feel like there's more information they squeeze into these schemes. Does it make the scheme better? I don't know. Because I feel like, once again, Master Ace is in this Master Yoda space where he's not overemphasizing everything. No disrespect, this reminds me a lot of a Lupe song. He's doing the GZA tricks, but he sounds like Lupe. The beat sounds like Lupe. The vibe feels like Lupe.
Oh, okay, I see that.
So I heard it like a Lupe song. Mm. Every time I hear it, it reminds me of Lupe. But just him playing off of. So she was blessed in an Orange Crush velvet dress, right? He's describing the dress as Orange Crush, but of course he's using Orange Crush. But I stayed in the bar because I already know how to go. I already saw the show. See, I went to the club like in this Toronto. I came back from Canada dry with no dough. Yep.
I think.
Shout out the city first, and then I'll give them Canada dry.
I want to say, and I'm going to say, how am I going to describe this? But this line, for example, I came back from Canada dry with dough. The way he rolls it out, and it's very, to me, I feel like it, like you were to your point, he's not like overdoing it.
He sets you up with Toronto.
I think that's why
he gives you the throw. The alley-oop is coming. He tosses it up with Toronto.
Exactly.
Slams it down with Canada dry.
Yeah. Because like the way he wrote this or structured it is dope. You know what I mean? But like, I know obviously like there's going to be rappers who can probably do wheels around this and probably write it even more cleverly.
Yeah.
But it, I don't know what it, like, I think it was to your point where you were saying like maybe the build up to it maybe is what made it dope. I can't tell, but, or maybe
compared to the new guys, the new guys would like this here. The thing is, they're just called, I call them descriptors or descriptions, right? Yeah. Toronto's the description for Canada.
Right.
So, okay, that works.
Right.
But the new MCs, they'll throw in four descriptions, like in a row. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like clear, bubble, popping. You know what I'm saying? Like when the shit bubble, it'll be clear when I pop, when you see Canada dry. You know, like they'll go that fucking far. And it makes no sense until you hear it straight up.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll even break down the word like Canada, right? So can add a, right? So can add a dry, like soda, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They'll find all these extra layers into it. Whereas Master Ace is, and I'll keep it short.
Yeah.
It's digestible at a pop level.
Yes.
That's what I'm going for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's pop, and it's not, he's not trying to break you compared to like a cannabis.
Yes, yes.
Master Ace keeps it just like this, but to describe how those the rappers do it now, they are the answer key.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Without any lyric sheet, they're going to be the answer key to all the references that you're going to need to get out of them. With Master Ace, we really don't need an answer key for this.
Uh-huh.
And then I think that's where he kind of shines out, and like this song can be shown to anybody and be like, oh, that's clever. That's fucking clever.
Yeah.
But with rappers now, like Andre's describing it, it's like that.
Yeah.
It's always going to be a strong.
Yeah. Another thing,
a rap song with a strong idea is going to be at the sacrifice of something.
Yeah. And the sacrifice of the newer MCs is the Walmart listener is not going to get it. They're not even going to try.
Yeah.
You know, compared to what we have here, the Walmart listener is going to get it. Toronto, Canada, dry. Bam.
And I feel like maybe like the newer rappers that do all the special techniques to it, they kind of make you feel dumb.
Yeah.
I feel like Master Ace doesn't want to make you feel dumb.
Right.
He wants you in on what he's saying. And I feel like he doesn't come off where he wants you to think like he's like, you know, at this high level of understanding or lyrically, but he's coming down to earth to you.
And he's a dope MC. Yeah. It's like dope MCs and a wide net to cast.
Exactly.
That's all the best. Exactly. That's all the best parts about Master Ace.
Yeah.
He, like, you know, going back to how we get introduced to him, it's like, no, he made it sound like we can hop in and like, I feel like going to booth with him and drop a verse.
Yeah. That's what makes it inspirational as well, you know, because we're listening to at a time when we were all three of us, you know, aspiring artists and MCs. And when you hear a guy like this, it's very inspirational because he's making it feel like, you know, you could rap with me too. Like, bro, that's how he comes across.
He kind of keeps you grounded as an MC.
That's what I was going to say, grounded. Like, he's uncomfortably grounded as an artist.
You want to write, you know, you hear these hyper lyrical rappers and you want to get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
But then you hear somebody like Mass Ace, like, bro, I don't got to do that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
I can store all my ammo and make these shots that Mass Ace is doing instead of just like let off my lyrical Gatling gun.
Right.
You know,
I don't have to rhyme dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah,
I can just.
Yes.
Should I write that one down? Yeah.
I can just simply.
Ripping fiends. I have a couple of demons. Ripping
C's. I find it ripping C's. They'll be high like dimethyltryptamine. Freestyle, baby. But yeah, so you know, as far as what I'm hearing, though, maybe go to a mountain, do a little skiing. So I finished up my drink and said goodbye and got home before the sun kissed the sky. And no matter where you from or which way you leaning, now going pop got a whole new meaning. And it's done.
And that line right there, that bar, embodies the whole concept of, you know, about this whole club scene, the bling era, pop itself, rap pop. And now he's flipped the meaning on you.
Yeah. It's a win.
What's with the wire?
How impactful is a long hot summer? Find out 30
years. Master Ace, dude. Master Ace is the one. He is him.
And just when you thought he was like, oh, he's going to keep going with something like soda related, then with soap.
Yeah.
Right.
I
I didn't.
But what is the comparison from soda to soda? So pop and cleanliness,
right? Bubbly. They're both bubbly.
Bubbly. Yeah, bubbly. Bubbly. Bubbling.
I didn't remember how many brands of soap there was until I just hear it all. And I'm just like, talk about product placement, advertisement, the power of advertisement. Mm-hmm. It's just flashes, flash frames, bro.
That's another layer. Exactly. Right there.
Flash frames.
That's another layer.
The nerd baseball guy in me is kind of deciphering this lyric a little too much, but the Y2K is a brand new era. I'm trying to make hits like Yogi Berra. When he says era, the term ERA in baseball is used for earned run average. So I hope. So if he takes era as ERA for the earned run average, pitchers don't want the earned run average to be so high. Genius. But when you make hits like Yogi Berra, the runs come up a little bit.
That's why we got you on here, Mark.
Thank you.
I love that shit, man.
That's bars.
Yeah, I wonder how long it'll be in this biz, because it's not all cheer like you think it is. There's a whole lot to gain, but a lot to lose.
Just ask any rapper who paid the dues.
Let's go. Almost shouted out that rapper, Rappin' Do.
So we got some joke that came out recently where, well, I was talking to the fellas here and I was just like, you know, Biggie, he was rapping the song, which song is that?
So yeah.
And he was rapping the song. And he goes, remember rapping do to ha to ha. Never thought the hip hop could take it. I was asking Mark and Andre, I'm like, who's do?
Who's rapping do?
So we're driving at the dead of night right after we got done eating. And we played the Biggie cut, and all of a sudden, remember rapping Duke, the hot.
I was like, Duke?
And then all you hear in the background is just because me and Dre are the driver passenger. And all of a sudden, you hear in the background, who's Duke? And I'm driving, I'm like, bro, what are you talking about? Who's rapping Duke? And I'm like, bro. After that, it became MF Doo.
Rapping Doo.
Mountain Doo.
Doo who?
Super Doo.
Yabba
Dabba Doo. Yabba Dabba Doo.
Lou Doo.
Don't pursue Lou Doo.
So I still haven't had an answer to that question yet. When we cross that bridge with Biggie.
We got to do his album. We got to do Rappin' Doo's album.
Yeah, hopefully his new album, Dubai.
Yeah. Hopefully we find out.
He had that one. He had that one concert lineup. Paid dues.
That's funny.
So he goes with laundry soap and regular soap.
Everybody now and then bound to struggle. I just grab my wife and we lay and snuggle. We talk about Ivory Coast. How one day we're going to sail on the tide and
get whisked away. Come on, whist.
Look up at all stars till the crack of dawn.
Dawn?
Hold on. I never leave your side for long, but for now I keep on making you bounce and make sure something in my checking accounts. So I like that, man. It's like, listen, man, Master Ace is actually on that level, bro.
Yeah.
He has a song with Eminem that's crazy. I think it's Hellbound. Hellbound is dope. Eminem opens. We got another cat. Sorry, no disrespect. And then Master Ace closes it.
It was probably Rappin' Do.
It was probably Rappin' Do. Rappin' Do a second. Or DeBow. Maybe DeBow.
Oh, God.
But yeah, but an excellent song. Hellbound was a dope song. And Master Ace actually early on got on my radar. I found out later on that Master Ace was on that track. But what I see from him on this one is like, man, I don't see him tone deafing you, right? Or even cannabising you, not even Busta Rhymes-ing you, right? He's in this pocket that feels so fucking humble. It's like uncomfortable.
And when he's in the booth, you could tell he's not overexerting himself. Yeah, like, he just doesn't sound like he's going nuts.
He's just talking to you on the beat and he's not going nuts. And it's like, kind of at the time, that's what they was doing. Everybody was like, the most aggressive, how strong are you?
Yeah. And that's the best part about like when rappers have a story to tell, like usually they're going to keep the same cadence, you know, but to our case, like Ace doesn't change it up throughout a long, hot summer.
If I could think of any MC right now that is modern, that reminds me of Ace in regards to refinement, skill, time on the mic, and like really getting to his point, Ka. What's the name of his album? The album is some guy flying into the sky. It's a black and white album. This one, Ka does some shit that just blows my mind.
You'll get the album right.
Yeah, we'll show you. And Ka literally, he just made everything calm. He talks like this on the microphone when he raps. This calm.
Damn.
He's this calm.
But he pulls it off?
And it sounds so good.
That's good.
He's talking about some real shit like this.
That's ASMR hip hop right there.
Right. But Ka originally was on some raw, right? And now his current style, his current sound, his current age, his maturity, he's here. He's talking and he's rhyming exquisitely on this level. So Master Ace reminds me of that poised demeanor, right? Like Ka and Master Ace sound like they're sitting in a chair and they're not even reading the bars. They memorize them.
Yeah.
And they're just rapping. That's what it feels like. It feels so organic. It feels so natural. So yeah, man, Master Ace on this project.
Shining with passion too.
Yes, exactly, man. Yeah, I just love the plays off of everything he did on this one, man. So at the end of the day.
Hey, props to him for actually having an outtake album.
I mean, the outro. Yeah, like some Jackie Chan shit, right? Yeah.
And again, to the whole film thing, like this was like an audible movie.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man.
From the intro to the outro, like all of it, to the cover, everything. You know,
having a long enough drive, like every morning, got me to do a big big dent on the album, mm-hmm. and it's like, damn, you don't want it to end.
Yeah,
like you want to hear it through and through, like. It's an album with a story that you want to hear through and through, but it's also an album that you want to hear through and through regardless, even if on the track, it's like a layered album like that. Like the story's awesome to it and you want to listen to see how it continues, but you also want to listen to the tracks through and through as well. I think the best example would be like, Ninja Gaiden on the NES. Like Ninja Gaiden had all these dope cutscenes, but it made you want to play these hard ass levels. And like the gift, the actual reward of beating these hard platforming levels is that you get to see a dope cutscene. Cause at that time, in like 88, 89,
we didn't have cutscenes.
Tecmo was doing all these crazy cuts. I thought they were just doing football games. All of a sudden they did Ninja Gaiden
And changed the
dope cutscenes.
Changed the whole climate.
Yeah. So it's like, it's dual layered in that aspect.
Yeah. I just, the thing that I discovered or learned while doing this that I didn't know before was just his experiences. While I was a kid, this guy was already doing it and he was already a legend, you know, before we even got to this point of hearing him.
Yeah.
He's already been doing it. I didn't know that when I first listened to him, I just thought he just kind of came out that point in time, but you know, doing this, I'm glad that we are doing this, showed me, man, nah, this dude was doing it even before when we were kids, what was doing it.
Children's.
And he was killing it on top of that. Like we heard a little bit before the show, Symphony with the Juice Crew. We heard Sitting on Chrome, that album. And we didn't even get a touch of other solo albums. I'm sure they're dope as well. Yeah. Shows his versatile style, and the fact that his style's different from these albums compared to then. And it's still dope. Like he slowed it down and it's still dope. You know what I mean? And I guess that explains, you know, why his style is the way it is in some degrees. Like, you know, it lands so perfectly at the end of the bar. And, I guess, you know, early, like in the late 80s, early 90s, that kind of was a thing a bit of, like some rappers would do something similar to that. So I guess that explains it. When I first listened to him, I was like, man, he's just so consistent on that style and he pulls it off so well, you know,
and you can't go wrong with it. It's tried and true. And it's always been working.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, poets have been doing it off the jump, but it's like, if you keep it like that as an MC, you can never go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as long as you got something to say and a topic at hand,
as long as you have something to say, yeah, that's facts.
And the fact is too, he has intellectually profound ideas to provide.
Yeah, he's a true
But you
artist.
Know, you keep it in the basis of like, hey, I just want these two words to rhyme at the end of the bar on the majority of the time.
Yeah.
Facts.
I do want to mention Disposable Arts, you know, that check that out as well.
Mentioning that's a prequel to A Long Hot Summer.
Long Hot Summer is a prequel to that.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Exactly. And that cover even, he talked a little bit about that. We'll probably talk about that album on another episode, but I did want to mention something that I thought was really profound that he talked about on that album cover. He's sitting on a car seat, and it's, I guess when they were doing the photo shoot or whatever, there was some like the junkyard or something around, and there was these parts all scattered everywhere. He felt like the photo shoot wasn't really going so well. Like it was just him in front of a white screen. He was like, nah, man, I'm not feeling this. Let me go outside and like kind of explore the scene. And he saw that car seat and goes, man, people kind of knew I was into cars. You know, they kind of know that. He grabs that as a prop, sits on it. He goes, take a picture of this. He goes, I don't know, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Take a picture of it. And then when he comes back to look at it, he realizes that car seat kind of like represents that MC that's been like thrown away, disposed, you know, that they've been disposed by the industry. They were once in this fancy car, you know, they were valuable. And then they just were easily disposed out here in this junkyard. And in a sense, that's kind of what's happening to these MCs who are great artists, but because they don't fall in line with the industry, they get disposed of. And he's basically like fighting against that and choosing the underground
over the whole game.
It's great.
It's hard.
That's the craziest part about the imagery of that underground like resistance kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like in every Hollywood movie, Demolition Man, right. Any type of underground right. cave dwellers and right. shit, they're always like decrepit and dirty and shit. Yeah. And it's like Master Ace, like Master Ace and a lot of underground rappers kind of keep that motive. But dude, they're the best. Like almost all of them are the best rappers to do it.
Yes.
Facts. And it's like, damn, like,
facts.
I don't know, man. Maybe the term underground too, man. That's always been
less marketable, I guess, is what it means.
Yeah. But it was always cool to say that. Hey, you in underground hip hop?
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like a secret. It's, cool. It's like a speakeasy like a kind secret, of thing.
It's like a secret society almost, like you're part of the underground.
That's kind of what it was. It's just like there's a pleasure in saying, I got these artists that you might not know about.
Yeah. They would even just say you like underground.
Right. Yeah.
Like, okay, was he talking about like underground techno? And everything subroots to everything. Like underground hip hop? Yeah, that's cool.
underground folk jazz.
There's just something cool about that.
Folk jazz? You ever heard of Underground Yankovic? Weird Al's doppelganger?
So
he does parodies of his parodies.
Get down to Yankovic.
Underground Yankovic.
And I think it's cool. I really do think it's cool what he's doing now, man. The fact that he's like doing shows still, the fact that he's making, like trying to make this into like a musical production. Theater,
yeah, that's super cool, man.
That's another level.
Yeah, I will see. I'll watch.
That's another level. And I look forward. And I'm hoping like if it does go to New York or Cali or whatever, that we get to experience that. I kind of want, I've been wanting to, for us three to like do more shows, more, you know, live events. I even told Tone Deaf, he did like a live the other day and I told him, man, are you coming to Cali? Because I want to do more shows. I want to be more present in the moment, you know, and I don't want to miss that. I feel like we're at a good age right now of appreciation for great MCs such as Master Ace.
Yeah.
And I just want to experience that one go around.
I feel myself at a spot more to like, if I ever see a rapper or somebody that's impacted my life, just to give them my two cents. And it's like, you kind of feel bad because you know, how many times have they heard that?
Yeah.
But it's like, I have to, I feel like it's within my honor to like, let the person know who inspired me or whatever. Yeah. It's like the same when Biz gave me like, just got me like that.
Yeah, or like, I thought you were kidding at first.
Or was it like, you know, it's crazy stuff. Yeah. It's like me and you, like when I used to meet like my, like pro wrestlers and stuff, I was like mesmerized, but I always told them thank you.
Yeah. I was tripping about the cannabis giving us some props on one of our shorts.
Oh yeah.
That was cool. I was tripping on that. You know what I mean?
we figured it out on him, one of his lyrics, and he was like, all right, that was cool.
Just final thoughts on the album, Mark, with Master Ace and Long Hot Summer. What's your takeaway of this?
Hearing it from getting the actual privilege to hear from start to finish. Again, like I mentioned, I started with that Travelocity song, thought it was very witty. And then just other tracks, like we can't even name the other tracks that come with this. There's Brooklyn Masala,
there's a lot of other
Travelocity with Words and Mass Ace. They actually do one there too, and Punchlines in it too.
Right.
There's dope tracks layered in with a hell of a story, and you got characters like Fats you kind of want to see develop as well.
Yeah.
Mass Days took a very serious approach to this, and it's just like, it's a perfectly dual layered album. Yes. To where you get the story, but you don't just get a story. You also get memorable tracks to talk about within this. So it's pretty awesome to bring this out to you guys and to have a listen to it and just listen to some songs like The Grind Again.
Yeah.
That hit me so hard now because
it's the grind every day.
I got bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's the grind every day.
Yeah. Andre, what are you thinking?
Same
about?
Deal, man. You know, for all the guys that usually take suggestions from us from albums, this isn't a super lyrical album, but Master Ace is super lyrical, right? He's like a hyper lyrical MC. And what we get on this album is this perfect refinement and almost humility of a story being told and almost foregoing the artist in a way that it's not all about how talented he is. It's about how well this story is put together. Treat it like you're watching a good film and you'll get a lot of gems out of it. Just like a good film, there's multiple layers. You know, there's the base layer of him and Fats, but then other layers emerge the more you listen to it.
Yeah.
Fats could metaphorically be a lot of things, a lot of things. So I just, as far as the depth and the talent in this story, that's what you should look at. Don't look for a bunch of rhyme schemes.
Yeah. This is kind of like when a good example of that would be like, you know, you know how like nice Bruce Lee is, right?
Yeah.
But when you see him do like one of his seminars, he'll teach you the 1-inch punch. But to him, it's just, okay, this is standard stuff. He does the 1-inch punch. Some guy falls back in his seat.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
But then you see other seminars of other cats. You see Steven Seagal doing Aikido. And Steven Seagal is just like,
Steven Seagal.
All these dudes.
I didn't know when his name would be mentioned on this podcast.
When Steven Seagal does his Aikido. It's like, bro, like there's... Those guys are flipping way more than you.
Out. Yeah, exactly.
But this is an excellent showcase of Master Ace showing you this. Look at this style, tried and true. This is the gentleman who has done this punch 1,000 times, perfected it.
Yeah,
and he couples that with a concept. He has a lot of armor built up on this, and it's like, you know, he's just giving you a showcase. He's not going too crazy. He's just showing you a lot of capability with it too.
And he also does other albums. Like if you keep going on from these albums, you know, he does one about being in high school. He does one in regards to his mom using MF Doom beats and calls it MA Doom, Master Ma Ace Doom. Doom.
Yeah. Nice.
But hard.
But mother, Ma Doom.
Yeah. And mother, I just got that right now from Dre. But like he is a specialist at like taking you to a place in time. And he captures that so well in each of those albums. And he describes things and he gives you imagery of things where you feel like you're there in the moment with him. And he just has a different eye, I would say, in the way he sees things, a different perspective in hip hop. He's had a lot of experience. So he comes with that aspect. And he's just highly valued and respected in my opinion. Like Master Ace is one of those guys. He's one of those guys, staple, you know, in hip hop. Like he's helped kind of build this in a sense. His style is unique. It's different. I don't know how else to put it, but a true legend and a true master, man.
Yeah.
And you're just watching a master at work.
Ace is a master.
And it's awesome to actually have a platform where we can actually bring new life to a long, hot summer.
Right.
For people to listen to it for the first time. Like that's the one thing that I like about this is that I hope people just listen to these albums for the first time. Like, damn, it's fucking nice, man. Like, and then they just become Master Ace fans. Right. They become Tone Deaf fans. They become just Jedi Mind fans, etc. That's what you hope for because every which MC or every which group that we mention, they deserve their props and much more.
Yeah. And this helps me too, because Dre put me on to Tone Deaf. I mean, I kind of heard his name before, but like diving in to just even, this is a good entry point, I think, when he brought us in, because he brought us in to the same album he listened to for the first time. So now I've become a fan of Tone Deaf, you know what I mean? So like, as we keep on doing this, even myself, I'm learning a lot from you two on it. And I'm sure everybody else probably from us three. So we're just passing it along, man. We're just sharing the wealth.
That's big old learning tree. Everyone gets to learn.
Mastermind, just a mastermind.
So thank you guys for listening in on this episode today. We really do appreciate it. There's a couple of things I want to mention. One, Dre does this thing called Lyricology 101.
Hey.
If you didn't already know that, so check him out. Mark, he does this thing with the Notorious Pin. We follow one of his accounts on TikTok, so you guys can, you know, check it out there. Or what's the website again?
TheNotoriousPin.com or on Instagram at LNotoriousPin. Notorious Pin.
So I wanted to mention those quick things, but we're dropping episodes weekly on Mondays. And another interesting fact is that we're doing freestyles. I think we're going to start doing it
Every five episodes.
You know, that I think will be it feels like 10 episodes takes a while. So, and I kind of want to, we've actually been doing them off
camera. Off camera, yeah.
Off, like,
don't be telling them that.
Yeah, saying, exactly. Like, added shit. You better cut that out.
We're in the hyperbolic time chamber, homie. Right.
So, you know, we'll do it every five episodes, you know, and I'm thinking
keep
like
the sword sharp.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking today? I was thinking like, man, what if we,
brought rap
what
and
if
do?
We, well, Just what if we had back. Wordsworth on and like, or Ayatollah on, and they did like the beat while we're freestyling.
That's nothing, bro. Nuts. I'm on it, man. You know me. I'll rap on anything.
That'd be nuts. But anyways,
I'll rap on anything.
But anyways, that's just me.
That's a lot. That's overwhelming.
That is overwhelming. I'm just throwing out ideas, but I was just thinking about it today. I'm like, man, that'd be so crazy. But anyways, thank you guys for listening and supporting. If you haven't followed us, please make sure you follow us on YouTube, TikTok. That's .hiphop. You can find us on Instagram. Or you can search us on YouTube. That's Hip Hop. It's a podcast. So search us, find us there, and we out. Peace.
Love you guys.